理课堂听 class.com
Studio Classroom is on the air. Tony Blair, Britain's Prime Minister, is an idealist, and he has shown he's not afraid to make hard and unpopular decisions when he really believes in them. Welcome, everyone, to Studio Classroom. This is your advanced program, and my name is Troy, and today is our third day of the People article on Tony Blair, the Transformer. And with me in the studio today are our three co-hosts from the last 2 days' program. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Troy.
Now, we've been looking then at the early influence upon his life in day one. In fact, we see that he was a baby boomer. He was born in that period of history just after World War II, 1946 to 1964. And so he's a baby boomer, typical, it's said, of most baby boomers. But there's been this detachment and loneliness. I don't think he himself feels lonely, but that just simply means that in the political atmosphere, in the political arena of daily life, he's an idealist. He tends to stand head and shoulders above other politicians within Britain because he has ideals that he believes in. And he's willing to follow those ideals even at the cost or the political risk that might be involved. And yesterday on the program, we looked a little bit at the influence in his life concerning his political philosophy. And what did we learn from yesterday's program concerning his political philosophy? Anything?
He was very influenced by a man called John McMurray, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and John McMurray, of course, is a philosopher, and he has written several books. He wrote several books. And it was when Blair was first introduced to him after reading those books that he was impressed by McMurray's ideals. Basically, those ideals we read were that people could live together in communities based on friendship, love, and the golden rule. And Phil, when we use the word the golden rule, what is that?
Well, yesterday we said the golden rule essentially says to do to other people the way you would want them to do to you. So basically treat other people the way you would want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best way for us to live together in communities.
And so he's more or less taken hold of this political, you can call it Christian socialism, I think is one term that has been given to that political viewpoint. And he's taken hold of this, Blair has, and he's tried to use his political philosophy to influence people within Parliament and also to influence people internationally. He believes that there is a way to bring people together relationally, to heal the rifts that divide people politically and relationally and find ways to work together. Well, that certainly is something that he has attempted to do in Britain. Of course, now he's facing a lot of heat. At the time that we are recording this program, listeners, we know that Blair is undergoing lots of scrutiny by the press as well as by the British government. So we're going to read then today about Blair's own style of politics. We've talked a bit about it, and I think Melissa, she herself being a Britisher, she will share some with us about his own political style. So now let's have Steve begin with the lesson's first reading.
Blair's own style of politics. At first, Blair went along with the Labour Party doctrines of the day: unilateral disarmament, nationalization of industry, withdrawal from the European community, without strongly believing in them. But he gradually discovered his own style of politics, which almost always involves reconciling opposites: fiscal discipline with social spending, tough anti-crime policies with compassionate welfare support. Blair rarely goes out dining or drinking with members of his party, preferring to go home to his wife and kids. Blair is impatient with the status quo and can be grand in his ambitions. Jesus was a modernizer, he once commented, and although he does not wear his religious faith on his sleeve, he appears to be motivated by a pre-political moral idealism. He aims to be what former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher once said he already was, a decent Christian gentleman.
All right, let's begin then with our discussion of Blair's own style of politics. And we read then in the first paragraph what?
He first went along with the party doctrines of the day, what they always stood for: unilateral disarmament, nationalisation of industry, and withdrawal from the British, the European community.
Okay, so those were, in essence, the tenets of his own political party, the Labour Party. They're called here the doctrines of the Labour Party. And basically, when we use the word doctrine here, we're simply saying that it's a core of beliefs or ideas that the Labour Party holds to be important. And so the first one is unilateral disarmament. Now, we've heard this term. We certainly read it in magazines. But what is the meaning here within the article, Phil?
Unilateral disarmament means that the country will get rid of its nuclear weapons without waiting for other countries to do the same.
Okay. Now, uni, U-N-I, at the beginning of this word here, actually means singular or one, right, Melissa?
That's right. It means one, and the lateral means a side. So literally, unilateral is one side, one-sided disarmament.
Okay. So whether or not another country decides to get rid of its nuclear weapons, our country will. And so that's the meaning here. Now, bilateral disarmament, of course, the word bi there, the prefix simply meaning two, means that two countries agree together to reduce the number of nuclear weapons that they have. But unilateral disarmament is one of the policies or party doctrines of the Labour Party in Britain. And the other one is nationalization. And that's another one of our political terms, Rachel. And what does it mean?
To nationalize something is to change it from private ownership to government ownership. Essentially, the government now has control.
A change in its status, right?
That's right. And that's actually a really big issue in Britain, because we have our public transportation, we have our energy, our the companies that supply our energy, our electricity, were all privatized in the 80s from being under conservative rule when we had Margaret Thatcher reigning. And so it's been going back and forth, you know, can these companies run privately or should they be nationalized? Should they be under government rule? And so this is where Tony Blair's coming into, trying to figure out what's what.
Well, this is very interesting because we know that in most governments within the world where there is a nationalized government and they pretty much are in charge of the infrastructure and they are in charge of the main businesses within the country, there has been lots of privatization, which is the opposite of nationalization. And so what I have seen, at least within the United States and within other countries, even here in Asia, there is a reduction of the number of nationally or governmental owned businesses. They're being sold off to individuals who are of private companies to run those businesses and actually make them pay for themselves. But apparently the Labour Party feels differently about this. They believe in a system of nationalization where the government actually is controlling the business itself.
And of course, that means that the taxes will be a lot higher for the public when these different areas are under national control, because that means the taxpayers will have to pay a lot more money to pay for these different services controlled by the government.
Okay, and that is Phil's personal political view coming out for us. Thank you, Phil.
And yet, that's what happened, and
yes,
that's where everybody in England just, It was terrible, basically. I think everyone was in out, uproar.
Yes.
We had many taxes, but we had something that was called the poll tax, which I think I remember my parents being extremely opposed to. But thankfully, after a few years, in fact, when Tony Blair came into office, he actually removed it, I think, a few years ago.
And so in the beginning, then, he says Blair went along with these Labour Party doctrines. Another one, a third one here we read in the article, is withdrawal from the European community. I know that he, at least traditionally, at least within Britain, there has been very little support for accepting the euro as Britain's major denomination, currency denomination, but they've stayed with the British pound sterling. That might change in the future. Just recently, Sweden, of course, rejected it. They decided to go ahead and stay with the Swedish krona. They didn't want to take on the euro. Well, that's a part also of the Labour Party doctrine. And then we see here that gradually something happened to Tony Blair.
He started to discover that he had his own ideals, and they didn't quite match with the ideals of the Labour Party.
And what was that change, Melissa?
He tried to reconcile opposites, and it says in our article, fiscal discipline with social spending, and fiscal just means the financial side of things, the budget that the government has. And I think, in fact, that's something that he did very well. He tightened the social spending, he lowered our taxes, but he also did do a lot to help the privatization, the nationalization side that we were talking about. He let some of the state-owned industries continue to be privatized because he could see that they were very successful already.
So in that sense, he hasn't fully supported Labour Party politics. In some ways, he's tried to reach across, again, to at least conservative side of politics, the right side, and say, well, they have some good ideas too. And so in a sense, he's mixed his politics together, bringing in conservative ideology or ideas together with his with the more liberal side coming from the Labour Party. Okay, so I guess it's always difficult for governments to reconcile something such as fiscal discipline. You know, this is the amount of money, the budget that the government has to spend, and you can't spend any more than that budget. And then you have the social spenders on the other side who say programs in order to help people within society, those programs are very important. When we need to spend money in order to keep these programs functioning and to keep them ongoing. So how do you balance that? Well, that's what he's trying to do. And also it says get tough anti-crime policies versus compassionate welfare support. So, and these are two issues as well, even within the United States. If someone tends to be tough on anti-crime policies, they tend not to be as strong, perhaps, on providing welfare support for people who are poor. So we see these in contrast, and yet here, his own brand or style of politics is to hold these ideas together in tension, and somehow to form a policy that works for the majority. Now it says Blair rarely goes out dining and drinking after work. Why is that?
He prefers to stay at home with his wife and with his family because, as we've seen earlier, he believes that the family is a very important unit in the society.
Okay, and that actually comes from the philosophy of John McMurray and something that Tony Blair ascribes to and he believes in. Now, there is something that he's impatient with. I would think he would be a very patient man, especially because he's dealing with party opposites within Parliament. But there is something he is impatient with.
He's often impatient with the status quo. And every society has a status quo. And it just means the way that things are now, the existing condition. And because he tends to be an idealist and grand in his ambitions, he often doesn't want to settle just for what everybody else thinks is important.
I see. So in a sense, he's progressive, isn't he?
That's right. He is trying to make things more modern. He even modernized his own party. He gave it a new name. We hear the term New Labour, not just the Labour Party, but New Labour.
Yes. And I also read someplace else that he does not have the same traditional outlook as most European politicians, which has been when history, you know, deals you certain conditions, you simply do the best you can. And for him, regardless of what the situation is in the present, he always believes there's a way to change that. So he doesn't need to surrender to the status quo and just simply say, well, que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. But he believes that it can be changed. In fact, he says Jesus was a modernizer, he was heard to once comment. Now, does he wear his religious faith on his sleeve, Phil?
No, he doesn't talk very openly about his Christian faith. I think he usually keeps it to himself, but he wants it to show in the way that he conducts his life in his public policies.
Okay. Now, what does it mean to wear something on your sleeve? That's kind of an idiomatic expression in English that we have.
It means that you're making something very obvious to someone else. You're displaying it very obviously. It's as if you have this huge sign on your sleeve for everyone to see and say, here, this is what I believe in. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't do that.
And we also use this idiom when someone perhaps is acting very negatively. Maybe they're very angry and they will wear their feelings on their sleeve, which means they want everyone to know that they are angry. And you might, as I have said to my daughters, don't wear your feelings on your sleeve. You don't need to let everyone know that you are angry, especially since you have no right to be angry. And so in this case here, he's not wearing his religious faith on his sleeve. He doesn't make it his goal to let everyone know that he is a Christian, and which I believe he's actually said that he is. But again, he doesn't go around preaching or telling everyone that he is. But obviously, he does appear to be motivated by a pre-political moral idealism. That's kind of a mouthful there, pre-political moral idealism. What do we mean by the word idealism? We've been using that term, and it's one of our political terms, Rachel.
Idealism is simply the practice of envisioning situations in a perfect ideal form. So it's kind of always seeing the way things could be if they were done perfectly, correctly.
And on the other hand, what I like about Tony Blair is that he's a realist too. He also understands that when there needs to be change, he doesn't just depend upon his idealism to lead the way. He also recognizes that you have to make hard decisions in order to accomplish certain ends to make those ideals actually to be realized. Well, he has this moral idealism that he shares, and it says he aims to be what former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher once said he already was. And what's that?
A decent Christian gentleman.
I can just hear Margaret Thatcher saying that. She would say, a decent Christian gentleman. Something like
that's
that.
That's not bad, Troy.
So, well, now let's read the last half of today's lesson, The World's Greatest Baby Boomer.
World's Greatest Baby Boomer. He risked his political career on a single moral proposition, that it was right to use U.S. and British strength to liberate the people of Iraq. Whatever one thinks of his specific policies, one has to recognize that this risk points to something in him deeper and more interesting than was previously seen. In waging a struggle on behalf of such a widely unpopular cause, Blair has emerged as the world's greatest baby boomer. Baby boomers have always believed that theirs was the most gifted generation and was meant to solve the problems of humankind. A little self-absorbed and self-indulgent, but also admirably independent and self-confident. Boomers grew up drunk on idealism and have always spent an excessive amount of time congratulating themselves for this quality. As Blair's example suggests, their idealism may mature, taking on a serious and productive form. Here's hoping.
All right. So we already defined the term baby boomer, which is someone born during a period when a lot of babies were born. In the United States, this was the period between 1946 and 1964. I consider myself a baby boomer because I was born in 1960. Although I don't necessarily, I would not define myself the way I am defined here in this last half of the lesson. But we read that in the article here that Tony Blair risked his political career on a single moral proposition. Now, a proposition here, at least when we're speaking in philosophical terms, means that it's something you believe to be true. And there's something that British Prime Minister Tony Blair believed to be true. In fact, he was willing to risk his political career on it. And this was recent. And what is that?
He thought that it was right for the United States and British strength to liberate or to set free the people of Iraq.
All right. And we see now, of course, that that also has gotten him into lots of trouble, but he still stands by his words. He still stands by his ideals, and he did believe and does believe that it was the right thing to do. So, in a sense, he's not a pacifist, is he?
No, he's not. He is actually very assertive. I don't think he's aggressive, but he's assertive, which is slightly less than being aggressive. He stands for what he believes in, and he goes for it.
And he's also willing to adjust his position, I believe, based on reality, based on what he sees needs to be done.
Well, he believed that the situation really required action, and in this case, military action to free the people of Iraq.
So whatever one thinks of his specific policies, you have to recognize that this risk, the risk he was willing to take to enter Britain into war in Iraq with the United States, it points to something in him that's deeper and more interesting than was previously seen. All right. Well, it says in waging a struggle on behalf of such a widely unpopular cause, Blair has emerged as the world's greatest baby boomer. Well, I think in a sense here what they're saying is that he's probably emerged as the world's greatest idealist, would be another way to describe it. And so it was a struggle he had to wage with the British people, wasn't it?
That's right. I think the British public were never totally behind him in the Iraq situation. They were not sure that this was the best thing to do, but he was very sure.
The people in the U.S., in contrast to the people in Britain, really admire Blair because they think that he stood up for what he believed was right. He had this belief that it was correct to go to war in Iraq, and he followed through with that ideal, even though it was unpopular with the British public. And I think that's something that perhaps U.S. President Bill Clinton would never have done. He would have probably looked at the public opinion polls and then made a decision about what to do based on that.
Well, interesting that true to baby boomers, at least in Blair's case, they've always believed that their generation was the most gifted and that they were meant to solve the problems, it says, of humanity or humankind. And yes, I guess baby boomers are self-absorbed or self-indulgent. The word here, self-absorbed, just simply means concerning themselves. They're always thinking about those things that are important to them. And if you're self-indulgent, it just simply means you spend a little more on yourself in terms of money, perhaps, than you need to, or in terms of time, or in terms of having fun. Baby boomers tend to be a bit self-indulgent, but it says they're also admirably, this is a good thing, independent and self-confident. It says boomers grew up drunk on idealism. Now, is it possible to be drunk on something other than alcohol? I guess so.
Oh, definitely. Just to be drunk on something is an idiom. It just means to be so excited about something and overcome with emotion that it's kind of like wearing something on your sleeve. Everybody around you can tell that it's something you feel very strongly about.
Okay, so to be drunk on perhaps the movies, someone would say, oh, have you seen the latest movie or heard the latest, you know, music soundtrack from that great group? And you would say, what? I don't know what you're talking about. And they would say, oh, you haven't? Well, it's quite obvious that that person is drunk on the music industry, or they're drunk on the movie industry.
Or you could be drunk on love.
Oh, that's true, too. Well, in this case, Tony Blair is drunk on idealism. And it says, like other baby boomers, they've spent an excessive amount of time congratulating themselves for having these qualities. But, as Blair's example suggests, their idealism may mature, taking on a serious and productive form. So maybe the writer here is suggesting that idealism in and of itself isn't enough. There needs to be more reality that needs to be fed into the system. There needs to be a better, a broader perspective that one needs to take in. And I do know that this is the problem with idealists. They tend to forget that this is not the way the world is. Oftentimes, the way we want it to be isn't the way it is, and therefore we need to adjust our position and we need to adjust our convictions to address the situations as they really are. Well, that's why the author ends the article by writing, well, here is hoping. He's hoping that perhaps Blair will continue to form and to mature his own political belief system. And I think he has, because he's not a true Labor Party person, and he's not certainly a conservative, but he tends to be a blend of both, I find. Well, now let's listen to today's feature before we come back for a few minutes of closing.
Hey, Tony, join us for drinks?
I don't know. I think I'd just rather be home with my family tonight.
You have always been sort of an oddball.
Yes, well, I'm not really a status quo kind of guy.
Well, I am. I have a hard time saying no when everyone else is saying yes.
Well, Larry, we aren't going to get anywhere if no one is willing to lead the way, right?
So that's why you aren't afraid to have your own style of politics, eh?
I don't know. I guess I simply believe in working to heal the pains and divisions between people.
It sounds to me like you might be drunk on idealism, old boy.
I might be, but my hope is that all of my idealism will bring together the peoples of the nations so that we can have a society of families who trust each other and are responsible for their...
Well, I hope you picked up on the humor in that feature. And most of the time in our features, we try to provide you with something to smile at, as well as a recap of the terms that are presented there. We do have terms in our vocabulary focus section that says raucous, which is simply to be impolite or disorganized, noisy, and violent. Then we have the word detachment. That's there. And you can read then in your advanced magazine if you have it with you, or if you don't, you can go out and buy one. We've got a nice list of political terms as well as the vocab focus. Well, I've appreciated talking about Tony Blair. Have the rest of you?
Yes, definitely.
I've learned a little bit more about his life.
I have too.
And I admit that I've come to respect him and appreciate him even more.
I agree.
He has a tough job.
He does, and certainly one that I wouldn't want.
Okay. That's right.
Well, until next time, friends, thank you for joining us. And until then, this is Troy.
And this is Melissa.
And this is Phil.
And Rachel.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.